Lunch with Pippa Hudson. And now,
Consumer Talk, featuring Wendy Nola.
It is lovely to have Wendy Nola back with us in studio. Welcome back to Cape Town, Wendy.
Thank you at last. Thanks, Pippa. Good to be sitting opposite you again.
Yeah, good to have you here. Our breakfast cereal on the menu today. We're going to be taking a closer look at what is inside those boxes and whether they are really healthy breakfasts. And I know I'm going to preempt this as Wendy and I were just chatting. I know there are some of you who have already decided that that's not part of your breakfast options and you would rather make your own eggs and fruit bowls and whatever. And good for you if you can do that. But there are many families for whom the convenience and the cost of a breakfast cereal is a common option on the breakfast menu. And if you would like to snap, crackle, or pop your way into a conversation about which are the better of the bunch, give us a call on 021-446-0567 or send a voice note to 072-567-1567. We will make some time for a couple of open line calls in the final half hour as well. Wendy, why this topic? Why the interest and the fascination with breakfast cereal all of a sudden?
Okay, so a few weeks ago, I was working on a story about Rice Krispies. You might recall 18 months ago, we did it on the show, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Kellogg's South Africa, without warning or explanation, they replaced the decades-old iconic Rice Krispies with a far sweeter vanilla-flavored multigrain version, which had literally thousands of consumers crying foul on every platform they could get onto. Their kids in the main hated the taste, they said, and the packaging change was too subtle for most people to realize that Rice Krispies had, in fact, become multigrain Krispies. So it was now corn, rice, and wheat. And of course, wheat being a problem for some people. So there was also the aspect of declaring the allergen and all of that. So a friend of mine over the Christmas period in Durban, Lucia, sent, she discovered that what looked like the original Rice Krispies pack was back in a rather big around 500 gram blue pack. So of course, I dashed in there and got a pack and got hold of Kellogg's, and it turned out that, according to Kellogg's, they had listened to their customers, as they put it, and brought back the old Rice Krispies. Now, they're not making them here again. They stopped at their production line is now all the multigrain vanilla ones, but they're importing them from the UK at a price, as you can imagine, around 70 Rand for that 510 gram.
So you can
box,
have
and only in some places. I mean, I had someone from, I did the story for Times Live, and I had someone in East London phone and say, I've looked everywhere, and I got hold of Kellogg's, and they said, no, we're not in East London yet.
Okay.
So it's just a selective.
So they're back in South Africa in some parts, and you're going to pay through the nose. I mean, 70 Rand for a box of cereal is pricey. Look, having said that, you'd pay that easily for an upscale muesli, but for Rice Krispies, that is a big ask.
It is a big ask. Your child must really be missing.
Well, I'm intrigued to hear from our listeners who has gone back there. Have you been prepared to fork out the 70 Rand for a 510 gram box of Rice Krispies because you or your child loved them that much and missed them that much that you think it's worth the investment? But of course, this got you, Wendy, into the cereal aisle of the supermarket, and you started looking beyond the Rice Krispies.
Exactly. So there I was amid all the colorful boxes. And I thought, you know, because the difference between the Rice Krispies vanilla and the old one is, you know, three times the sugar, that kind of thing. So it's a big difference. And I started thinking, well, how would a parent who wants to, whose child is, you know, it must be cereal or nothing kind of thing, how would you then go about choosing, deciding which were the most nutritious, whatever nutritious is to you? That's the other thing.
Yeah.
I mean, because the promises, the claims that are made on the boxes range from nourish your great growth, development, whatever that's supposed to mean. You're supposed to assume, they're not actually saying it, but the assumption is this will help your child grow and develop. Source of 9 vitamins and iron, no artificial flavorings, energy cereal, of course, energy being sugar, made with 5 whole grains, high in fiber, and on it goes. All sounds great, but as I say, how do you then turn, the real story, of course, is on the back of the pack or the side of the pack, which with the ingredients, number one, and then the nutritional information, the breakdown of protein and fat and sugar and sodium and all the rest. So I chose 15 cereals, including the original and the vanilla Rice Krispies, and I asked the good, clever people at the Stellenbosch-based Food and Allergy Consulting and Testing Services, FACTS, and we've had them, Harris and his team, on the show many times.
Yes.
I asked them to come up with answers to that question. What exactly is healthy in a cereal? What is considered healthy? And who decides what that measure or that standard is that everyone can agree on potentially? And so enter Gabby Jackson, thank you, of Facts, who's also been on the show before, and she took the lead on this little project of ours.
Okay, so before I welcome Gabby, I'm going to put myself on the line here. So we're not huge cereal eaters in my house, Wendy, but I will say my son loves his Weet-Bix, and when I'm feeling particularly virtuous and or particularly overweight, it is the Special K I read for in the mornings. Lots of that happening in January. So I'm intrigued to hear how these different brands
all stack up. Those two were in my sample.
Okay, so we'll hear just in a minute how they did. Gabby Jackson, dietitian and lead on this project through Facts. Thank you so much for joining us today. Lovely to have you on the show again.
Thanks so much for having me, Pippa.
Let's start with this big sort of baseline question of how we define what is healthy. I mean, it's quite a contentious thing, Gabby. For some people, they might view a healthy product as being low fat, high carb. For others, it should be the other way around, high fat, low carb. Some would look to the fiber content. Some would look to the breakdown of the mineral and nutrient content. Where do you sort of set the parameters? Is there any kind of norm and standard which is used to assess breakfast cereal?
Well, the first thing that you need to remember is dietary prescription and the way that each person eats is completely individual. So we can never have a one-size-fits-all kind of scenario where we say this is the answer for everyone, because that's just not true to human beings. We're all a little bit different. And that is actually one of the first things that kind of came up when I was speaking to Harris and Wendy about how we could look at this, because even from a scientific and a dietary point of view, there is no straightforward, this is how it should be. Although we have got healthy eating foundations that we like to follow, such as trying to avoid very high sodium foods, very high saturated fats, trying to avoid too much added sugar, and then looking at increasing total fiber intake, there's still no absolute set standard that is the right answer for all people. No. So it kind of left us in the state of going, okay, well, how do we come up with a standard or something that we can use as a scientific tool to compare these cereals and kind of come out with what could be essentially the top three or top four cereals that are currently available, you know, of the 15 cereals that Wendy was talking about. And that's when we actually turned to legislation and we said, well, the draft regulation, which we're hoping is going to be published sometime soon, which is the regulation on labeling and advertising of foodstuffs, mm-hmm. proposes the use of a tool called the nutrient profiling calculator. And essentially what that is it's a scientifically validated tool. There were studies which were done by Northwest University. There was a massive big study which was done in about 2013, and it was based on a model which is currently enforced in Australia and New Zealand. And it looks at the negative attributes, if I can call them that, of food, so high energy intake, total sugars, saturated fat, and sodium. And then it compares the positive attributes of food, so things like fruit and vegetable and legume intake, nuts and seeds, then protein intake and or total protein content and the fiber. And it basically puts all of those things into a calculator tool, and the outcome of the calculator is you either pass, you get a yes, you can make claims on this product, and it is a healthier product, or a no, it's not a healthy product. It's too high in the sodium, saturated fat, total sugars, and too low in the protein and fiber, for example.
Beautifully explained. Thank you very much, Gabby.
Okay, so Wendy, you obviously looked to this nutrient profiling model as the kind of yardstick to use in your experiment with those 15 packs.
Yes, so I was very happy to leave it to the professionals, and that made sense to me. It is part of the government's draft regulation relating to labeling and foodstuffs, known as R429, but it's draft, so the manufacturers don't yet have to legally comply.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's still, you know, it's the draft regulation. It most probably will become law. So I just took images of, I didn't really want to buy 15 packs, so I stood in the aisle. Nobody stopped me. I took pictures of the front of the pack and then the nutritional breakdown and the ingredients list, and sent Gabby a very large WeTransfer file, and left them to get on with it. So and they really analyzes. Take the credit. Yes, okay. And then send me the results. So
what were the results?
Okay, so 5 of those 15 did not meet the NPM.
Only 5.
And I'm really surprised. We were all surprised. Yeah. It's a nutrient profiling model for those who have just tuned in. 4 of them were Kellogg's products, and not terribly surprising which ones they were. Unicorn Fruit Loops, Strawberry Pops, Cocoa Pops, and Rice Krispies Vanilla. Those last 3 were all reformulated at the same time, by the way. It wasn't just the Rice Krispies recipe they changed. They made Cocoa Pops and Strawberry Pops multigrain as well and added sort of a different kind of coating, sugary coating, I think. The 5th product not to make the grade, and I must stress, this is not on the market. This is in our little sample of 15.
Yeah.
So the 5th product not to make the grade of the 15 was White Star's vanilla-flavored instant porridge.
Okay, so Gabby, as I've just said, I confess I'm quite surprised. I expected that the results would be a lot worse than that, and that in fact more brands would not pass because of the sugar content in particular. As a matter of interest, seeing as the conversation started because of Rice Krispies, how do the original Rice Krispies do against this benchmark?
Well, Pippa, I must first also make a disclaimer that I was also quite shocked by the results. I was expecting far fewer of the breakfast cereals to actually pass the nutrient profiling model. So I myself was also quite surprised by the results. But I had this discussion with Wendy. You need to remember that the way that the profiling model is set up is even if a product is very high in something like total sugars, if they have got a reformulation and they increase the fiber content and increase the protein content of the cereal, then it means that the cereal might all of a sudden start passing the nutrient profiling calculator. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a healthy breakfast cereal choice. Okay. So you do still need to take the results of nutrient profiling with a very large heap of salt.
Okay. But it's, since it's the only tool we have, it was quite interesting that I think you told me that the original Rice Krispies did pass, but only just, right, Gabby?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was... Yeah. Just below a fail.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting. It's mainly because of the sugar content, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's much in the way of protein and fiber, I would imagine, Gabby.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the individual brands you looked at, and particularly those 5 that didn't make the grade. Wendy, can you explain to us why it was that they didn't make the grade? What was the sort of red flag?
Well, I think... probably Gabby could answer this one better, but I was just, I mean, I simplistically, when I look at these cereals, I always go for the sugar because that's the thing when those of us who just lay people think, oh, it's too much sugar. So for example, the sugar content of Fruit Loops was 18 grams per 100 grams. That's 18%. That's quite high. Strawberry Pops though and Cocoa Pops each 33 grams per 100. That is a whack, a big punch of sugar. The ones that passed, let's just name them. ProNutro Chocolate surprised me. It was the one cereal my daughter used to eat when she was living at home. Future Life Chocolate, Wheat Bix.
Yay.
Jungle Oats Corn Flakes. Another yay for you, Pippa. Kellogg's Special K.
Okay.
Jungle Crunchalots, Milo Cereal, and Honey Cheerios. That one's made by Nestle.
That's and again, I'm surprised because, Gabby, I mean, you see a brand called Honey Cheerios. You expect that's going to not pass on sugar levels straight off the bat. And as somebody's commented on the WhatsApp, I don't believe any commercial cereals have good nutrition except for good old plain oats. They're all loaded with sugar. So
We're going to get there now with the healthiest
we'll get to
ones.
That. Let's maybe flip the conversation over, and rather than focusing on the ones that are not passing, which were the brands that scored best on your index for the healthier choice of the 15?
Well, the healthiest of the group that we took was certainly Jungle Oats, because
yay,
of the fact that
favorite.
They are purely just oats and there's nothing else added into it, followed by Wheat Bix.
Okay.
And then the third up was a tie with Kellogg's Special K and the Crunchalots, which is a jungle cereal.
So Jungle doing quite well out of this one.
Okay. All right, we're going to have to just take a pause for the Eyewitness News headlines, but we'll come back and continue the conversation with Gabby Jackson and Wendy Nola about what's actually in the cereals we're putting in the bowl, often in front of our kids before we send them off to school. Lovely to hear some of your comments, particularly on the issue of the Rice Krispies, whether you're prepared to pay the 70 Rand to buy the imported version of the original recipe, or whether that is just too big an ask. Keep your voice notes coming to 072-567-1567.
Cape Talk.
Consumer Talk.
WhatsApp 072-567-1567.
Hi, Pippa. Very interesting discussion on cereals. One quick question is, where would the Future Life Zero fit into this whole picture that your guests are painting? Thank you.
Hi, Pippa. Sala over there. I'm new to Cape Talk. But interesting discussion regarding the cereals. I mean, it's not only our kids that eat this stuff, we also consume them. So it's interesting to by accident, get this information. So it's really helpful. Thank you for your research, Wendy, and everybody involved. So it's quite informative. I'm not a health nut, but I do take care of myself. I'm approaching 50, so yeah, we wanna keep it as long as we can, you know, as it were, keep the engines running. So cereal for me is important in the morning. It keeps me motivated and active. So thank you for this information. So now, just I don't know where the Kellogg's cornflakes normally lands, because that's the one I just go to quickly to get me going. Would like to know, is that also on the 15 list? Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Solomon. Well, welcome to Cape Talk, and long may the relationship last. Thanks.
It was on the list. Yeah, it wasn't in the worst, and it wasn't in the best list. So it's somewhere in between. It does pass the nutrient what on earth is it again? NPM, the nutrient profiling model.
Yes, okay. Interesting. And the comments, a couple of people asking about Future Life. You tested the Future Life chocolate version, so that would have been had added
sugar.
Since
I chose the ProNutro one, chocolate, I thought I would match it with the Future Life one. It couldn't be an exhaustive test. Yeah. I didn't want to load Gabby and her team with, you know, 30 boxes of cereal. So I just did what I thought was quite a representative spread. So I'm at pains to say this isn't a test of the market. It's a test of 15 that I chose. I would imagine that the zero what though? What doesn't it have? Sugar? Does it not have?
I would imagine the sugar.
It would probably have fared better, obviously, on that model.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And it is interesting. Just to recap again, I think what a couple of people are finding confusing, and Gabby, maybe we can just elaborate a bit further, is so many of these products would appear to be unhealthy because there is so much sugar in it, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to fail. Won't you just clarify for us again, what is it that makes a product fail or pass?
There are a number of different factors. So it's sugar, saturated fat, and sodium, which are the negative factors, and then protein and fiber, which are the positive factors. So essentially what you want to have is the positive factors outweighing the negative factors. So more protein and fiber, less total sugar, saturated fat, and sodium in a final product. But you do have to kind of be careful, and this isn't a 100% foolproof way of analyzing breakfast cereals to say, yes, absolutely, the ones that have passed are healthy. I use the word loosely. But it is, as I said right in the beginning, it is very much a personal preference. It's a case of each individual. And something else that I stressed in the conversation that I've had with Wendy thus far is it's also about portion control. And that's something that a lot of consumers really struggle with. In private practice, very often we'll have patients coming to me and say, well, you know I'm eating the right kinds of foods, but I'm really struggling with my portion control. So there are a couple of different elements that you always have to consider when you are looking at what is going to be a healthier choice.
Okay, thanks very much for clarifying there. We've got one Rice Krispies fan who's back on the source.
Oh, really?
Veronica and Fishhook saying, the moment I heard that the original Rice Krispies were back, I dashed off to the supermarket for a box. I'm happy to pay 70 Rand because it is a huge box. So Veronica, very happy to have them back and prepared to shell out the money to buy the original version.
Can I tell you something? It's quite sad. My friend, the one who alerted me to the return of the original Rice Krispies, she has an 8-year-old daughter who was one of those kids who only had Rice Krispies for breakfast, a fussy eater, and her mom was just only too happy to find something that she would put in her stomach before school. And when the original were taken off the market, the child refused to eat the vanilla ones, but she put her onto some other, and I honestly can't remember which one, but one of these more sort of sweeter cereals. Mm. And so she bought this, shelled out the 70 rand for the imported from UK original Rice Krispies. And the child, after a few mouthfuls, said, "Mummy, they taste like nothing," because her palate has now got used
to the sugar.
Isn't it sad?
That's terrible. So she's probably asking her to sprinkle on a tablespoon of sugar.
It's interesting. Dear, in 18 months.
That one's actual taste.
She can't remember that she enjoyed the Rice Krispies, which
sweetened version.
Yes.
That is terrible to hear. Before we talk about response from the companies that we've spoken to here, we've got Len on the line from Circuflé wanting to comment. Len, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Pippa. I'd like to introduce a book by the name of Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. This is written by a fellow called Michael Moss, in which he explains just how the top 11 food company CEOs got together long after darkness in a deserted building to discuss whether they were doing the right thing by increasing sugar levels, by increasing blood pressures as a result of the foodstuffs that they were creating. It goes on to talk about how they had analytical chemists who worked towards hooking people onto sugar and various other substances.
Sure.
The outcome of the meeting, as it so happened, was that the golden dollar was far more important than the health of the nation. It's a riveting, riveting read. It's not the easiest read, but I would really suggest someone like Wendy with an eye for this sort of thing really has a go at it.
Michael Moss will do. I've actually heard about it before.
Thank you, Len. So Salt, Sugar, Fat by Michael Moss, one to look out for. Just before we carry on with cereals, very sad news that I think many of our listeners will respond to. The death of one of the Monty Python team, Terry Jones, has passed away. The Welsh actor and comedian who was a member of Monty Python, his agents sharing that news via Sky News just a few minutes ago. Mm. Very sad news. I'm a huge Monty Python fan. Yeah, okay. Back to the breakfast cereal. So Wendy, we had the results of the sample of 15, the ones that passed, the ones that didn't. And as you mentioned, four of the five that didn't pass were all made by the Kellogg's brand. You went to Kellogg's for a response. What did they tell you?
I did. I should probably recap which those were. They were the Rice Krispies, the Strawberry Pops, the Cocoa Pops, and
Fruit Loops.
Right. Mm. The statement read, Kellogg's are sub-Saharan Africa's head of external relations. What a mouthful. Zandi Mposelwa. She sent me the statement. The company was aware of the nutrient profiling model, the MPM, she said. And it is, she pointed out, you know, it stressed that it is a draft regulation. It is not yet implemented as a regulation in South Africa. As we continuously innovate and renovate our foods, we are mindful of the need to comply to 429 when it becomes implemented. So she's obviously meaning that profiling model will become implemented. It seems they're not working in advance of the promulgation of it. They're just sticking with what they have for now. In the meantime, she said the nutritional information of each cereal is displayed on the packs along with a guideline daily amount values to give consumers data to make an informed decision. Pioneer Foods response, they make that White Star instant porridge, vanilla flavor one that was in the sample. They said, it was a very interesting response, actually. They said, in preparation, so unlike Kellogg's, they preparing in advance for the promulgation of the new food labeling regulation. They reformulated the product. They tweaked it in the way that Gabby was talking about. So they reduced the sugar I think they also reduced the sodium, and they increased the fiber. Mm-hmm. And they've sent it off to an independent accredited, SANAS accredited lab, and they confirmed that it now passes the MPM. But the company has yet to update the packaging. So the information that I sent Gabby, it's not that Gabby did it, got it wrong. the information on the pack is outdated because, according to Dani Bauer, who heads up Essential Foods, a division of Pioneer Foods, to update packaging for every incremental nutritional improvement comes at significant expense. In the current economic environment, we are cautious in respect of any cost increases to the company as well as to the consumer, as the outdated information is not in any way detrimental to the consumer. We elected to first conclude this work prior to implementing packaging changes. The new pack, a pack that actually reflects what's in the product, the formulation of the product, will appear on shelves sometime this year, he said. So what's in the pack doesn't currently match what they're declaring.
Interesting.
I know. And we would never have known if I hadn't sent
that. Yeah. I mean, one can understand from the business perspective, if you are continuously tweaking the recipe and having to change, you can't remodel the packaging every time. But that is interesting.
You know what it says?
Yeah.
No one would know.
But they were forced. Nobody would know
the difference. So why go to that expense? So obviously they want to run out their old packs, all those things. We know people in the packaging industry.
Yeah, we do. So we can understand the economic imperative.
Yeah. And then when that's finished, then they'll bring the new ones. And I dare say they might be motivated now to do that sooner rather than later.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I want to just bring Gabby back in here. And just for those who didn't join us at the beginning of the segment, Gabby, who is joining us to look at the sort of nutritional content that we're talking about here, is Gabby Jackson, who worked on the sample through FACT, the Food and Allergy Consulting and Testing Services, based in Stellenbosch, to give us some nutritional analysis. Gabby, very interesting point made by a listener on the WhatsApp that it's not only about what's in the boxes themselves, it's the way people eat them. So you've already referenced the portion control issue, but this person points out oats and Weet-Bix might score well because they're low in sugar, but so many people add sugar or syrup or honey to make them more palatable. That would obviously change the outcome of the sort of big picture view of those products, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I have a saying where I very often say to my patients, it's not about being 100% perfect 100% of the time. It's about doing the bad stuff well. So if you're doing something, you're putting a little bit of honey, for example, into your breakfast cereal, yes, you are kind of to some extent destroying some of the good health properties or diminishing those good health properties. But at the end of the day, you have to weigh up whether the benefit of getting, you know, the jungle oats and getting all that fiber, the oat beta-glucans, all of those good elements are completely cancelled out by putting a teaspoon of honey. If you're putting an entire tablespoon of honey, then yes, you probably are cancelling out those benefits.
And also, if you're buying the right honey, and this is a separate show we've done a few times, if you're buying the right honey that's adulterated with the syrup, etc., the health benefits in that also are far greater than just spooning on the white sugar.
So, Gabby, what's the bottom line for our listeners? And again, I want to say I know, and a couple of people messaging saying none of us should be eating any of them. That's lovely if you're able to do that. But that's another conversation for a different day. For those who do depend on a breakfast cereal in some way, shape or form to be part of their kids' breakfast or their own breakfast, what's the recommendation of what they should be looking out for?
Always say to my patients, rather go for something that is a little bit more simple. So your jungle oats or your Weet-Bix, which we know are, technically speaking, healthier options. Yes, there are always going to be sugars in that total sugars column, but you have to remember that total sugars is the intrinsic or the natural sugars of the grain as well as added sugars. So provided that that number doesn't start getting too close to the total carbohydrate value, you know that the added sugars is not sort of over the top. Okay. And then use other natural ingredients to add that flavor. Put in your own nuts and seeds. Put in your own, you know, chopped banana into your
cranberries or something.
Exactly. Put a handful of dried cranberries in there so that you are kind of in control of really getting something that tastes very nice, but you also know from a nutritional standpoint that you are getting the better option. And, you know, again, you can kind of argue it in any direction. You can say that breakfast cereals are absolutely terrible, and you can say that actually some breakfast cereals are really good for you and they should be included on a virtually daily basis. And that comes down to, as I mentioned earlier, personal preference, what the individual needs, and what is going to suit into their lifestyle. Because there's no point of completely overhauling your diet if it's something that's not completely realistic for your lifestyle.
Yeah. And thanks for that, Gabby. And also thank you to the person pointing out in the WhatsApp line that for some people these are life and death questions. And if you have a diabetic child, for example, being able to know and trust what's on the labels and what's in those boxes and where the sugar content sits, etc., is a terribly, terribly
needs
important
to be
factor.
Accurate. Legally too, it needs to be accurate.
It's a really interesting. Thank you. Gabby, before we let you go, if I may, out of left field comes a listener question that I think you can probably tackle for us. Somebody asking about the use of the labeling word light, L-I-T-E. What is that actually supposed to mean? Is there a legal definition of when it can be used?
There is a legal definition, and it is controlled under the labeling and labeling regulations. So in order to use the term light or any other comparative claim, reduced light spelled L-I-T-E, it doesn't really matter what wording you're using. But essentially what you have to do is you have to have a like for like. You have to compare apples with apples. You have to compare it to either another product that you are already manufacturing or another product, similar product on the market. There has to be a more than 25% difference in the specific nutrients. So either your sugar content, fat content, total energy content, but the light product has to be at least 25% less. And you actually have to clearly indicate that on the label. So in the case of something like, because we're talking about breakfast cereals, if you look at a light muesli, it would be a statement, something to the effect of 25% less sugar than the whatever muesli in our range.
Yeah.
And that is completely acceptable from a legal point of view, as long as you do meet those requirements and you are clearly indicating that that it is what you're comparing to, that you do meet that minimum requirement.
So it's a comparative term, and I think that's really important
to
understand.
Yes, you can't just throw it out
there. Doesn't necessarily mean it's low sugar everything. It's less of than the regular version of the product, if I'm understanding correctly.
Exactly.
Thanks for that. I think we can squeeze in one more voice note question. Let's take a listen.
Good afternoon, Pippa, Sean. You tell me, now when you have your wheat mix or you have your cornflakes or whatever, is milk healthy to have it with?
Gabby, would you like to respond to that?
I feel like that's a very loaded question.
Depends which kind of milk, I guess, for one thing.
Exactly.
Is almond milk milk? That's
a whole other debate.
Sorry.
For different folks. We look at the nutritional requirements of the individual, and then we look at practicality. I personally have got no vendettas against milk. I do not think that milk is bad for us, especially when you are going for, dare I say, low-fat milk. There is no added sugar in low-fat milk, and obviously we don't want to push up that saturated fat intake in the diet. You don't need to go all the way to the extreme of going fat-free. If it doesn't suit your palate, that's absolutely fine. But there's nothing wrong with putting milk into your cereal. And some people will actually argue that it's quite good from a from a nutritional point of view, especially with children needing to get their calcium in.
And older people. My father's doctor just told him to up his dairy intake.
That's interesting. Mm. Okay. Gabby, thanks. You've given some really fascinating insights today. We've really appreciated the work you did behind the scenes for the show as
well.
Thanks so much for your contribution.
Thanks so much for having me.
Dietitian Gabby Jackson speaking to us there from Stellenbosch. She's with the Food and Allergy Consulting and Testing Services Facts. A really fascinating conversation. Wendy, as a matter of interest, somebody's asking about bran flakes, regular or bran flakes. Were those on your sample?
I didn't, sorry. I probably should have put those in, but I'm quite sure it's got very high fiber and relatively low sugar, so it would have passed. It might even have been up there in the top three. I don't know. But I think given what we've learned from these results, I think it's fair to say that product would be on the healthier end of the
scale.
Spectrum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been a fascinating conversation, and we squeezed in one sort of open line-ish question. Marie and Betty's Bay, your question about the radio, we're going to have to hold over until next week in the open line. Sorry we didn't get to it today. Wendy, great to have you back with us.
Thank you so much.
And a reminder
to listeners,
same time next week. And if you want to send us a case for Wendy to investigate, the email to use is consumer@nola.co.za, K-N-O-W-L-E-R, consumer@nola.co.za, or contact her via her Facebook page, Wendy Nola Consumer.